Chapter 65, The State of Affairs Before the Reformation. A well-known proverb tells us, God's mills grind slowly, but they grind exceedingly sure. We, insignificant people, in our foolishness, think at times that God's mills grind too slowly. With this I mean that according to our thoughts and opinions, the Lord works too slowly. Oh, if only we were permitted to do it. If only we were permitted to rule in the place of God. Then it would be altogether different. Then it would go much better, much faster. From this it appears that our understanding is darkened, that we have lost the true wisdom. In our rashness, we think that the Lord does not do things right. We notice so little that the Lord works in His own time and in His own way. We would like to give the Lord a helping hand. We do not entrust the Lord with it. If we do not get our own way, if it goes differently from what we had anticipated, then we become discouraged, sullen, and finally rebellious. Then we lose courage and say or think peevishly, nothing will come of it. Now it has become impossible. Then we shrug our shoulders, dissatisfied, and blame God for everything. Yea, then we often begin to pity ourselves. And just then, when it becomes impossible with us, and if, according to our way of thinking, the most suitable time is past, just then it is usually God's time. We expect it from one direction, and it comes altogether from a different direction. It happens there where we did not expect it at all. Eventually, it is obvious that the Lord does it much better than we would ever have done it. Later, we have to admit, the Lord has done all things well. But then, only God deserves all the honor for that. This is how people are today, but thus people were formerly too. Thus it was also at the end of the Middle Ages, about which we have dealt in the chapters we just finished. Great changes have taken place. Just think of the art of printing, through which it became possible to multiply the written word in a cheap way, so that it came within the reach of everyone. Just think of the invention of gunpowder, through which the waging of war changed altogether. The nobility lost its significance more and more, and the third class, that is to say, the common citizens, became powerful and rich. It was a golden age for the farmers. The large continent of America had just been discovered, and because and through that a flourishing trade slowly came into existence, through which many earned an ample living. The art and learning were renewed and led into other channels. We still remember that, do we not? Humanism, about which we told you in Chapter 62, was the renewal of the learning, and the Renaissance was the renewal of art. With respect to that which is external, prosperity prevailed in many ways. The Roman Catholic Church was rich, wealthy. Gorgeous church buildings, adorned and beautified exceptionally luxuriously, stood in cities and villages. With respect to that which is external, the church flourished, and nothing better could be desired. And yet, just on ecclesiastical terrain, great dissatisfaction prevailed among thousands of industrious citizens. The outward glamour of the Roman Catholic Church no longer satisfied them. the dead formal service in which the church was hardened gave no satisfaction. Besides, they were often shocked at the offensive life of the clergy. They no longer permitted themselves to be blindfolded by outward pomp and splendor. The people desired at times unconsciously something different, something real. So many attempts had already been made to bring about a change in this. Serious warning voices had been heard everywhere. In southern France, the Waldenses had given an example through their life and doctrine. John Wycliffe in England, John Huss in Bohemia, and so many others had given warning. But all those attempts had seemingly come to nothing. The answer of the Roman clergy had been fierce and violent. Those sincere reforming attempts have been suppressed and struck down cruelly and with blood. It seemed as if all opposition against the usual course of things was nipped in the bud. Oh, to be sure, the warnings had found an echo in the hearts of hundreds of thousands. Happy and hopeful expectations were aroused, but that was finally the end of it. The people had become tired of fighting. It was no avail anyway. They had hoped so often already that a change would come, and everything remained as it was. They shrugged the shoulders despondently, and finally they resigned themselves to the existing conditions, even though they were so offensive and dissatisfactory. The Roman clergy grinned. And then, suddenly, the Reformation came. Irresistible. No one actually reckoned any longer on that. And just then, it was God's time. The Roman clergy attempted to ward off the approaching storm. They reviled and threatened. They called the Reformation an act of revolution, but that was just not so. The Reformation was no revolution, but an act of God, a work of the Lord, and for that reason, the Reformation could not be checked. We could really say that the dream of Nebuchadnezzar was fulfilled the second time. Again, a small stone became a large mountain. The Reformation also started so small, so insignificantly, but that was not to be checked. The change came at the exact moment. God did not make a mistake. Yet the Lord has used instruments. The King of His church does that all the time. The instruments were men who had been enlightened by God's Spirit and endowed with God's grace. They were men who, in the power and strength of the Lord, stood firm for the truth and who did not shrink back from strife and trouble. With those men, I mean the great reformers, Luther, Zwingli, and Calvin. However, before I commence with the history of these people, I must first tell you something about the political state in Europe, and then it shall be evident that God came just at the right time. And then we shall clearly notice that although God's mills grind slowly, yet they grind surely. About the year 1500, and there were three powerful kingdoms in Europe. Spain, with its extensive colonies in South America, was a world power. However, France and England surely were important too. At that time, Germany was divided internally, and through that was practically powerless. We know for a long time already that Germany consisted of various provinces which were called electorates. Electors ruled over them. Although these electors chose an emperor, yet he really could do nothing without the support of the electors. And just in that rent and divided Germany, the Reformation commenced. Germany became one of the middle points of the Reformation. In 1519, the German electors chose Charles V as emperor. This prince was at that time only 19 years old. The electors chose him just because then they could continue to play the boss. They thought such a young emperor cannot as yet rule very well, and he shall listen to us. We shall tell him how it must be done, and he shall not dare to oppose us. But they made a mistake, because although Charles V was still very young, yet he knew very well what he wanted, and he refused to be the will-less page of the self-conceited electors. The great aim in life of Charles V was to restore the ancient empire in its full glory of the past. Besides, he wanted to tolerate only one religion in his realm, and of course, that would be the Roman Catholic religion. All that quarreling upon ecclesiastical terrain had to stop. Charles V was resolved to severely punish all those that would not obey the Roman Catholic Church. They had to submit themselves to the doctrine which the Church prescribed. However, of all those ambitious plans of that young emperor, very little has materialized, because in God's counsel it had been determined otherwise. Again, the great aim in the life of Charles V was one religion, the Roman Catholic religion. But the design of God was to deliver his people, his church, just out of the power of Rome's heresy. The life's aim of the powerful German emperor clashed with God's decree. It is true, Charles V was a powerful monarch, but he could not hold out against the omnipotence of the King of Kings. He had to lose against that. He did not want to yield. Then the Omnipotent One crushed him. The aim of Charles V in life had to fail. At the age of 55, as a broken man, he abdicated the government. The entire life of Charles V has ended in one great disappointment. It could not be otherwise. Does not the Lord say, "My counsel shall stand"? Who then can keep up the struggle against God? Charles V was not only emperor of Germany, but he was also king of the powerful world empire of Spain, and besides, he was lord of the Netherlands. Hence, he was the most powerful monarch of his time. Spain was a strong Catholic country. France was also a Catholic country. If those two countries had contracted a friendship with each other, and if they had allied themselves, then they would have destroyed the Reformation and had nipped it in the bud. However, the Lord directed it in such a manner that those two Catholic nations were mortal enemies of each other. In those days, King Francis I ruled over France. Charles V had to wage war, four bloody wars, against that French monarch. Various electors in Germany chose the side of the Reformation. It is true, another part of the electors remained faithful to Rome, and these supported their emperor. But each time when Charles V wanted to use strict measures against the Reformation, a new war with France broke out. However, to bring that war to a good issue, he needed the support of all the electors. Then he had to postpone his plans to cut down the Reformation until later, because otherwise the Protestant electors would withhold their support from him, and he could not do without them. In that way, time and again, the powerful emperor was stricken with helplessness. Don't you see the hand of God in this, who prevented him from carrying out his evil intentions? Besides that, Charles V had to wage a bitter fight with the Mohammedans. They forced themselves more and more toward the north. They even came before the gates of Vienna, the capital of Austria. By this, Charles V was kept busy his entire life, and the Reformation in Germany could advance peacefully. Herein we clearly see the golden thread of God's reign. The King of Kings rules over the earthly kings and emperors. The life of the nations is governed by him. And when finally the wars with France and the Mohammedans came to an end, and Charles V made himself ready to destroy the Reformation with one blow, then it was too late. But we hope to tell you more of that later. All these things had to work together for the good of the Church of the Lord. The powers of hell could no longer check the Reformation. God himself maintains his church here upon the earth. The gates of hell shall not prevail against the church.